This article is brought to you by the best-selling books Eight Right Every Time, The Black Book of Eamon Blackthorne. Because the right words, at the right moment, change everything. How to use feedback for continuous improvement. A practical system for turning feedback into lasting workplace growth. In short, after reading this, you will have a complete, repeatable system for using feedback to drive continuous improvement in yourself and your team. Prepare before every feedback conversation so the message lands clearly. Tie feedback to specific behavior, not personality. Follow up consistently, because without follow-through, feedback dies. Definition: feedback for continuous improvement is the structured practice of giving, receiving, and acting on specific observations about work performance so that individuals and teams can make deliberate, ongoing progress rather than repeating the same mistakes or waiting for a crisis to force change. I have watched a lot of feedback conversations fall apart. Not because the person giving feedback was cruel, but because they had no real system. They said their piece, the other person nodded, and 2 weeks later, nothing had changed. Both of them quietly concluded that feedback does not work. But that is not what happened. What happened is that feedback was treated as an event rather than a process. Using feedback for continuous improvement requires more than good intentions. It requires structure, timing, and follow-through. Most people struggle because they conflate delivering a message with creating change. They are not the same thing. In this guide, you will get a clear, practical process for feedback skills that you can use immediately. If you are unsure what workplace communication looks like when it is functioning well, start with the role of communication in meeting success, which gives strong context for how communication and performance are connected. Why strong feedback skills are harder than they look. Knowing that feedback matters is easy. Knowing how to give it, receive it, and follow through on it is something else entirely. Most of us have been on the sharp end of feedback that stung, confused, or demoralized us, so we overcorrect. We soften the message until there is nothing left to act on, or we wait so long that the moment has passed. Here is why this keeps happening. Fear of damaging the relationship. You care about the person you are speaking to, and you do not want to make things awkward. This fear is real, but it causes you to dilute feedback until it is useless. The relationship suffers more from unaddressed problems than from honest conversations. Lack of a clear structure. Without a framework for how to deliver feedback, most people improvise, and improvised feedback tends to drift into vague generalities that no one can act on. Tools like the SBI method exist precisely to solve this problem. Confusing discomfort with wrongness. A difficult conversation feels bad. That feeling gets misread as a sign you're doing something harmful. In truth, discomfort is simply the price of honesty. No follow-up habit in place. Even great feedback conversations collapse if no one checks back. Without accountability, people return to old habits within days. Receiving feedback poorly. Many people have never been taught how to receive feedback without becoming defensive. If you cannot model good receiving, you cannot expect it from others. The goal is not to eliminate these difficulties. It is to build a system that works in spite of them. The foundation. What you need before you start. Before you begin, there are three things that need to be clear. Number one, your intent must be genuine. Feedback given to protect yourself, to cover your back, or to score a point will poison the conversation before it starts. Ask yourself honestly, am I giving this feedback to help this person, or to manage my own discomfort? The answer changes everything about how you show up. People can sense your real motive within the first 30 seconds. Number two, you need specific evidence, not impressions. Vague feedback, the kind built on feelings rather than facts, cannot be acted on. Before you say a word, identify at least one concrete, observable example of the behavior you're addressing. Your report was unclear is not evidence. The executive summary in last Tuesday's report did not state the key recommendation until page 4 is. Understanding how feedback loops function within a team can sharpen your sense of what constitutes useful, specific evidence. Number 3. The timing and setting must be right. Feedback delivered publicly, or when someone is already stressed, is rarely heard. Choose a private moment when both of you have the time and the headspace for a real conversation. Rushing feedback is one of the most common ways to guarantee you it will not land. Get these right first. The steps that follow will not work without them. Step 1. Define what you want to improve. This step sets the entire direction of the feedback conversation, and skipping it is why most feedback goes nowhere. Before you speak to anyone, you need to name the specific gap you are addressing. Not a personality flaw, not a general dissatisfaction, but a concrete, observable behavior that, if changed, would produce a better outcome. This precision is what separates feedback that improves performance from feedback that just creates defensiveness. Identify the specific action or pattern you want to address, described in observable terms. Write down the impact of that action on the team, the work, or the outcome. Decide what the improved version would look like, because you cannot guide someone towards something you have not thought through yourself. Confirm the gap is within the person's control to change. Feedback on things people cannot influence is frustration, not development. Example: a team leader notices that one of her colleagues consistently sends reports without a clear summary at the top, which means other team members spend extra time hunting for the main point. She defines the gap as: reports do not open with a one-paragraph executive summary. She decides the target behavior is: every report opens with a three-sentence summary of the key recommendation and the main supporting point. She writes this down before the conversation. Once you know exactly what you are addressing and what good looks like, you are ready to have the conversation. Step 2. Choose the right moment and setting. Timing and environment shape whether feedback is heard or rejected. This step is about giving the message a fair chance before a word is spoken. Most feedback conversations fail before they begin because they happen at the wrong time in the corridor, immediately after a mistake in front of others, or when either person is under pressure. A few deliberate choices here can double the likelihood that your feedback lands. Choose a private setting with no audience. Feedback given publicly triggers shame. Shame triggers defensiveness. Neither of you wins. Give the person a brief heads up that you want to talk, without revealing the full content beforehand. I'd like 15 minutes with you later today to talk through the last report is enough. Choose a time when neither of you is rushing to the next thing. Feedback squeezed into a gap between meetings does not get the attention it deserves. If you are working with a remote team, asking for and delivering feedback in a remote context requires extra deliberateness about setting, so video with cameras on is the minimum. When the setting is right, the person in front of you is already more open before you said anything of substance. A quick note before we continue. Most people leave the hardest conversations for last and regret the words they used when they finally had them. The best-selling book Say It Right Every Time gives you 115 tested scripts for those exact moments, the ones that shape careers, relationships, and how people remember you. Get your copy at emonblickthorne.com. Now, back to the article. Step 3. Deliver the feedback with precision and respect. This is the step most people rush, overcomplicate, or hedge so much that the point disappears. Deliver the feedback clearly, kindly, and in full. The goal here is not to soften the message until it evaporates. It is to deliver the message in a way that the other person can actually receive it. That means being specific about the behavior, honest about the impact, and direct about what you need to change. You can be all three of these things and still be respectful. Open with the specific behavior you observed, not your interpretation of it. State the impact of that behavior on the team, the work, or the outcome. Pause after you have said these two things. Let the person respond before moving to solutions. Avoid loading the conversation with multiple issues. One clear feedback point per conversation is a rule worth keeping. Do not cushion the main point between two compliments if it dilutes the message. That approach, often called the sandwich, tends to bury what matters most. Example script. I want to talk about the last three project updates you sent the team. Each one was thorough, which I appreciate. But the key decision or recommendation was buried in the body of the email rather than stated upfront. The result was that three people came to me separately asking what we were actually deciding. I need the key point in the first two sentences of every update going forward. Learning to give feedback that strengthens rather than fractures relationships is a skill worth investing in separately. It will change how every conversation lands. Step 4. Listen to the response. Delivering feedback is only half of the exchange. What happens next determines whether anything changes. After you have said what you came to say, stop talking. The other person needs space to respond, and their response will tell you whether the feedback has been understood, whether there's context you missed, and whether they are ready to commit to a change. If you skip this step, you're broadcasting, not communicating. Ask an open question after you have delivered the feedback. How does that land with you? Or is there context I might be missing? Listen without preparing your rebuttal. If you are already forming your next argument, You're not listening. Acknowledge what they say before responding. I hear that the deadline pressure contributed to this is not the same as agreeing. It is respect. If they become defensive, do not escalate. Name what you are observing. I can see this is difficult to hear. I want this to be peaceful, not hurtful. Adjust your understanding if new information emerges. Feedback is a conversation, not a verdict. Emotional intelligence plays a significant role in how people give and receive feedback, and this step is where that skill matters most. Step 5. Agree on a concrete next step. Feedback without a committed action is just a complaint. This step converts the conversation into a plan. Before you finish the conversation, both of you need to leave with a clear, specific agreement about what will change and by when. This is not about pressure. It is about respect. Vague agreements produce vague results. Specific agreements produce specific results. Name the exact behavior change you're both agreeing to. Write it down. Set a time frame not soon or going forward, but a specific date or a specific trigger event. Agree on how you will both know the change has happened. What does success look like in observable terms? Ask the person if they need anything from you to make the change easier. Resources, a process adjustment, or simply less interference. Example, after the conversation about project updates, both people agree. From next Monday, every project update will open with a one-sentence summary of the key decision or action required. We will review the first 3 updates together in our one-to-one on the 15th to see how it is landing. The GROW method is an excellent framework for structuring this part of the conversation, particularly when the improvement plan needs to be more detailed or ambitious. Once you have a clear agreement, you have turned a feedback conversation into an improvement plan. Step 6. Follow up consistently. This is the step that separates a culture of continuous improvement from a culture of good intentions. Most people think the job is done when the conversation ends. It is not. The follow-up is where real change either takes root or dies. Without it, even the best feedback conversation fades. People get busy. Old habits return. And both of you quietly file the conversation under things we talked about once. Diarize the follow-up before you leave the conversation. Make it a formal commitment, not a vague intention. At the agreed date, review the specific behavior you discussed. Did it change? If so, say so clearly and specifically. If the change happened, acknowledge it directly. I noticed your last 2 updates opened exactly as we discussed. That made a real difference. Recognition reinforces change. If the change did not happen, revisit the conversation calmly. Do not assume bad faith. Ask what got in the way. Keep a brief record of feedback conversations and their outcomes. Over time, this becomes your evidence of growth and your guide for where to focus next. Consistent follow-through is what separates feedback that improves performance from feedback that simply creates the appearance of doing something. Step 7. Invite feedback on your own practice. You cannot build a feedback culture if you only give and never receive. This step closes the loop. Here is the truth of it: the people around you have observations about your communication, your leadership, and your work that you cannot see yourself. If you do not actively invite that perspective, you are flying half-blind. And if you ask for it, but react poorly when you get it, no one will tell you the truth again. Ask for feedback on specific things, not vague invitations. How did I handle the briefing today? It's better than any feedback from me. Receive what you hear without deflecting. Do not immediately explain, justify, or minimize. Thank the person for the honesty, even if what they said was difficult. Especially if it was difficult. Do something visible with the feedback you receive. If people see you acting on what they tell you, they will keep telling you. When you model the process you're asking of others, feedback stops being something that happens to people and starts being something a team does together. Adapting this process for remote and hybrid teams. Remote and hybrid working conditions do not break the feedback process, but they do demand adjustments in how you execute each step. The absence of physical presence removes most of the informal, incidental feedback opportunities that happen naturally in a shared workspace. You have to be more deliberate about creating them. Build a regular cadence. Without the natural rhythm of shared physical space, feedback opportunities have to be scheduled. Short one-to-one video calls, ideally weekly, create a consistent container for feedback conversations. Do not wait for something to go wrong. Use video for anything substantive. Text and email strip out tone, expression, and body language. Any feedback conversation that involves a significant observation should happen on video with cameras on. The absence of visual cues makes misreading far more likely, and misread feedback does real damage. Be more explicit about psychological safety. In a room, you can read the temperature of a conversation through body language and make adjustments. On a screen, you cannot. So you need to say what you might otherwise signal. I want this to feel like a safe space, to be honest. Nothing you say here leaves this conversation without your agreement. Document agreements carefully. Remote follow-up is harder to sustain because there are few natural check-in moments. Write agreed next steps in a shared document, a follow-up email, or a note in your project management tool immediately after the conversation. The core process holds regardless of where people are working. Only the execution changes. Common mistakes to avoid. Let me tell you about the mistakes I see most often. I have made most of them myself. The mistake: giving feedback so softened it contains no clear message. Why it happens: you want to preserve the relationship and avoid causing distress. What to do instead? Respect the person enough to be clear. Clarity is kindness. Vagueness is cruelty in slow motion. The mistake: delivering feedback in the heat of the moment. Why it happens: the frustration is fresh and feels urgent. What to do instead? Wait until you're calm enough to be precise. Reactive feedback tends to be about your feelings, not the other person's behavior. The mistake: piling multiple issues into a single conversation. Why it happens: you have been holding back several concerns and finally have the person's attention. What to do instead? Choose the most important issue and address that one fully. Save the rest for separate conversations. The mistake: saying good job without specifics when feedback is positive. Why it happens: you assume the person knows what they did well. What to do instead? Name the exact behavior you're praising. Specific positive feedback reinforces the right thing and builds trust for harder conversations. The mistake: skipping the follow-up because the conversation seemed to go well. Why it happens: you feel relief after a difficult conversation and assume the work is done. What to do instead? Schedule the follow-up before you leave the room. A good conversation with no follow-up produces nothing. The mistake: receiving feedback defensively and then wondering why no one is honest with you. Why it happens: the feedback feels like an attack and the instinct is to protect yourself. What to do instead? Train yourself to say thank you before you say anything else. Buy yourself time to process before you respond. These are not character flaws. They are gaps in the system. Fix the system. Your practical checklist. Use this checklist before you begin and after each cycle. I have identified a specific, observable behavior to address, not a general impression. I have at least one concrete example ready to illustrate the behavior. I have chosen a private setting with enough time for a real conversation. I have given the other person a brief heads up that we will be talking. I know what the improved behavior looks like and can describe it clearly. I am prepared to listen after I have delivered the feedback, not just wait for my turn to speak. I have a specific next step in mind to propose, including a time frame. I have scheduled a follow-up before the conversation ends. I am going into this conversation with genuine intent to help, not to protect myself. I'm prepared to receive feedback in return if it is offered. If you cannot check most of these, that is your starting point. Summary and next steps. You now have a complete, repeatable system for using feedback to drive continuous improvement, one that does not rely on courage alone, but on structure, preparation, and consistent follow-through. Define the specific behavior before you say a word. Precision is the difference between feedback that helps and feedback that confuses. Choose timing and setting deliberately. Even good feedback fails in the wrong conditions. Deliver your observation clearly, state the impact, and then stop talking. Listen to the response with genuine openness. New information matters. Agree on a concrete next step with a specific time frame before the conversation ends. Follow up consistently. This is where real change either takes root or dies. Invite feedback on your own practice. You cannot lead a culture you're not willing to live in. From here, I would encourage you to go deeper on two things. First, if you want to make your delivery more precise and less likely to create defensiveness, read how to use the SBI method to give team members feedback that unifies instead of divides. Second, if you want to turn agreed next steps into a structured improvement plan, how to use the GROW method to turn team feedback into a synergy improvement plan will give you a clear framework for doing exactly that. Using feedback for continuous improvement is not a talent some people are born with. It is a practice. Build the system, and the results will follow. Frequently asked questions. What is feedback for continuous improvement? Feedback for continuous improvement is the practice of regularly giving and receiving specific, actionable observations about work performance so that individuals and teams can make deliberate, measurable progress over time rather than waiting for annual reviews or crisis moments. How do you use feedback for continuous improvement at work? You use feedback for continuous improvement by setting clear expectations first, then delivering observations tied to specific behaviours, agreeing on concrete next steps, and following up consistently. The loop only works when all four parts are in place, not just the delivery conversation. How often should feedback be given for continuous improvement? Feedback for continuous improvement works best when it is frequent and informal rather than saved for formal reviews. Short, specific conversations after significant work events are far more effective than a long annual discussion that tries to cover everything at once. Why is feedback important in workplace communication? Feedback is the mechanism that turns workplace communication from a one-way broadcast into a genuine exchange. Without it, misunderstandings compound, performance drifts, and people lose confidence in whether their work is landing the way they intend it to. How do you give feedback that actually leads to change? Feedback that leads to change is specific, timely, and tied to observable behavior rather than personality. You also need to agree on a clear action, not just make an observation. Without a next step and a follow-up, even good feedback fades within days. What makes a feedback conversation feel safe for the other person? Psychological safety in feedback conversations comes from consistency, privacy, and focus on behavior rather than character. When people trust that feedback is meant to help rather than diminish them, they stop defending and start listening. That is when real improvement becomes possible. Thank you for listening. If this article helped, the best-selling book Say It Right Every Time will take you the rest of the way. 115 scripts ready to use whenever you need them. Visit emonblickthorne.com to get your copy.